Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, St. Paul says this is where our thoughts should be. Even if there's a tempest around you, find the calm, find the good, find the peace, and dwell there. That's what the saints did, and they made it look so easy, you know. Well, here on Call Me Catholic, we do our best to find that happy place where God's goodness grows. And while St. Paul says to think about these things, we say let's talk about them, too. Makes for better radio than just thinking about them, right? I'm Peggy Normanton, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, an hour of hopefully good and enriching conversation that is intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times so we can continue to wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh, yeah, you can call me Catholic. Jimmy G is my wingman here in the studio, acting as engineer and chief fact-checker for our program content.
Good morning, Peggy. Great to see you.
Good morning. Good morning. Are you following the World Cup? Is that a big deal for you? I know you're a sports fan.
Truth is, not really.
See, you just like, you call yourself a sports nut, but you're pretty much exclusively baseball.
You have me wired.
So yeah. Wimbledon doesn't interest you? Coming up Wimbledon?
Not a lot.
No, not unless I start talking about Juan Martín del Potro, and then you're always interested.
But the more you talk about it, that'll get me fired up.
Okay, well, let's hope I have something to talk about when they start playing Wimbledon. So 4th of July is coming up. Do you have anything planned for that? Do you have any special family traditions you do on the Independence Day?
Probably do a yummy barbecue.
Yeah.
You know, something along those lines. We've got like a little parade that runs through my town.
Which, oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in the parade?
You know, I was part of the parade for several years because I was kind of like the announcer guy. No, seriously.
The native son celebrity with the great voice.
I did that several years in a row and it was a blast. So, yeah.
We used to have a bicycle parade in our neighborhood. I think they still do it. We just don't participate in it anymore. Our son, Charlie, our youngest son, his birthday is July 3rd. So we always associate it with the 4th of July and we kind of combined it with his birthday. It's such a happy holiday, though.
Yeah.
I just love it. This year, kind of a bummer that it lands on Wednesday, because it cuts into your ability to have a nice 4th of July weekend. We're kind of starting the weekend now on our show. We're going to have a 4th of July show today, but you got to wait for it.
What I find interesting is, you know, so many folks like to tack on days off around a holiday.
Right.
So are they going to take off that Monday and Tuesday? Are they going to do the long weekend Thursday, Friday?
Well, that's the decision. I mean, that's why it's hard. Right smack dab in the middle of the week. It's tough to decide. So although you can never be certain of when the 4th of July will land each year, you can be sure that Call Me Catholic will be coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the star-spangled Christ Cathedral campus in Orange County. We are the Diocese of Orange. Now, the Diocese of Orange, as most of you listeners know, is located between the Archdiocese of Los Angeles and the Diocese of San Diego. And we claimed our independence from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles in 1976.
That's right.
A very patriotic year, I'd say. The bicentennial of our own country's independence. Now, we here in Orange, we didn't have to fight for our independence or anything like that. It was given to us because this region had upwards of 300,000 Catholics, and it was apparent that we could govern ourselves more personally with attention to the specific needs of our growing population here in Orange County. So in 1976, Bishop William Johnson, who was at that time an auxiliary bishop in Los Angeles, he was appointed as the first bishop to this region.
That's right.
And in accepting this appointment, he said, quote, "The very name Orange suggests a golden treasure, and the new diocese is all that in its physical characteristics, its people, and its traditions. The area is small enough to be unified as a true community and large enough to encompass a substantial number of generous-hearted people." Those were the words of Bishop Johnson back in 1976. Today, we are 1.3 million Catholics here in the Diocese of Orange. We are a really excellent reflection of the richly diverse growth in the American population, drawing from so many different cultures and traditions. Multiculturalism really is the hallmark of our diocese because we integrate Asian, Hispanic, and Caucasian ethnicities while still respecting and celebrating the traditions of each culture. And it's working really well. And isn't that what our country does so well? Don't believe what the media tells you, that we're all messed up here. We do it well. We do it better than any other country has done before us. We've set precedent in our merging of cultures. So go back to what St. Paul tells us, and dwell in the good. You see wonderful examples in your own community, I'm sure, of Americans coming together with different backgrounds. So dwell on that. Let that be your mantra this Independence Day holiday weekend. Kind of an early weekend. There is so much good news embedded in the great history of our country. I mean, we achieved the unachievable due to a lot of truly remarkable people in our history. We are going to talk about those people today on our special Independence Day show, a little early, as I've said. And we have a couple of experts that we've called in to share their knowledge and perspective. We're going to learn some American history today, kids. First up, we're going to be talking with Dr. Bradley Berzer. He's a history professor at Hillsdale College who wrote a biography on Charles Carroll. You know how you do that? You flip the words a little
bit. I sure do.
Like Siddle Lister instead of Little Sister. Charles Carroll, entitled American Cicero. Charles Carroll was the only Catholic to sign the Declaration of Independence, and I think that's really cool. We're going to explore that subject.
That's fascinating.
And then following our discussion with Dr. Berzer, we'll bring on the award-winning author and illustrator Demi. And we're going to find out how to pronounce her name, whether it's Demi. It's just it's a one word name.
I can't wait to find out.
She recently published a marvelous children's book on the father of our country entitled George Washington, His Legacy of Faith, Character, and Courage. So put on your American history caps. We are going deep today. We'll give you some great material for your 4th of July conversation over your fried chicken and apple pie or barbecue chicken and apple pie and fireworks. But first up, it's our Call Me Catholic Countdown, Independence Day style. So let's do my top five fun facts about Catholic history in America. This is kind of random, but let's see if we can do it. Okay, here we go.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
Okay, so like I said, just some random facts about Catholics in America. Okay, so according to a press release that came out from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, USCCB, I think this came out a couple of years ago, Rhode Island has the highest percentage of Catholics, 59.5%, compared to their overall population.
Interesting.
Now, I think their overall population is a little over a million, but that means that there's, you know, over 500,000 Catholics, almost 500,000 Catholics there. Now, Tennessee has the lowest percentage of Catholics, with making up only about 2.3% of their state's population.
Wow.
Now, so what's interesting here is that EWTN has no Catholic affiliate radio station in Rhode Island, but they do in Tennessee. We have four in Tennessee. So you see, we go where we need to evangelize.
Yes.
Rhode Island's fine. They're doing fine.
Go forth.
Hey, Rhode Islanders, you can always listen to us on EWTN's live stream or SiriusXM. Okay, so there we go. That's number five. Number four is the Stations of the Cross in St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City are works of art which won first prize at the Chicago World's Fair in 1893. Isn't that fabulous?
Yeah.
The Stations of the Cross won the top art award at the World's Fair in 1893.
I wonder if they had the actual exhibit of the stations there at the World's Fair.
They did at that time, and now they have it. It's reinstalled at St. Patrick's Cathedral. Yeah, they were there.
So 1893.
Yeah, pretty cool. Okay, number three would be that we have two saints in the Statuary Hall in the Capitol building. So, you know, all the states get to submit one or two people that they want to represent their state in history as a statue. And Hawaii has Saint Damien for all the work he did with the lepers in Molokai. So that's their saint, which is very cool. And of course, California has Saint Junipero Serra for his incredible influence on the development of the missions. So I think that's pretty neat that we have two saints in the Statuary Hall. There was a little kerfuffle about Saint Junipero Serra. Somebody was trying to yank him out of there, but he's fully installed. Even Governor Jerry Brown said, no, he's not going anywhere. Okay, now number two fact would be a long time ago, back in 1629, George Calvert, who was the first Baron of Baltimore, applied to King Charles I for a royal charter to establish the province of Maryland in the New World. The colony was to be a safe haven for Catholics in North America, free from old world persecution, and ultimately the only colony where Catholicism was the primary religion. And, you know, that's pretty neat because we use that term Maryland very easily, rolls off our tongue. But remember that it was instituted in honor of Mary.
So it was actually considered Maryland opposed to Maryland.
The land of Mary. In fact, on the back of the state seal, it reads Terra Maria, meaning land of Mary.
Very interesting. Okay.
So good for you, Maryland.
Random but interesting.
Random. I told you it'd be random. Okay. The number one Catholic fact I want to share with you today in our American history is that Charles Carroll is the only Roman Catholic to sign the Declaration of Independence. And he was also the last surviving signer, dying in Baltimore, speaking of Maryland, in 1832 at the age of 95. So there you have it, my top five facts of the day about Catholics in America. You're going to learn a lot more about the Catholic patriot Charles Carroll from a man who wrote a book about him. Dr. Bradley Berzer is up next to share some interesting background on this important figure in our American history. I'd like to keep you informed of our Call Me Catholic history, so we invite you to check out our Facebook page, Facebook.com/callmecatholic. It's kind of our show biography. Okay, Dr. Bradley Berzer is up next with history, with a history lesson about a very important Catholic figure in American history, Charles Carroll. So stay with us. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I'm your host, Peggy Normandin, and we certainly hope you're beginning to channel some of that 4th of July spirit from sea to shining sea. Independence Day falls in the middle of the week this year, kind of a bummer, but we're kicking it off early, sooner rather than later. And toward that end, we've invited an American scholar onto the show today to give us a short but important history lesson about Charles Carroll, one of our founding fathers, who happened to be a Roman Catholic. A bit unusual for the times, Dr. Bradley Berzer is a distinguished professor of history at Hillsdale College in Michigan. And among his many excellent published works is the biography of Charles Carroll called American Cicero. And that's what we're looking forward to talking with him about today. Dr. Berzer, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hi, Peggy. Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, it's great to hear from you. Now, Dr. Berzer, quickly, tell us how Charles Carroll entered into American history.
Well, he's best known for being really the great defender of independence in Maryland. And of course, we remember him now mostly because he was the only Roman Catholic to sign the Declaration. But he was a fascinating figure. And of course, we have to go well beyond just that idea that he was the only Catholic. That's true. But there was really a lot to him. And one of the reasons that I got interested in him was simply because he had so many connections to the medieval as well as the ancient Western civilization. And that's one reason I like to think of him as an American Cicero. I think he really was bringing that kind of classical and great Thomistic tradition from the medieval into American history and was well respected for it for the most part at the time.
Well, exactly what was the status of, I mean, how did he happen to be a Roman Catholic? That's kind of an unusual identity in that stage of American history.
Absolutely. That's a great question. So when the American colonies began, there was, as you said in your last segment, there was a movement towards allowing Catholics some kind of home in Maryland. And it was set up, of course, as a Catholic colony. But most of the Catholics who settled in Maryland had come from really relatively well-to-do families in England that had immigrated from Ireland at some point. But because Catholicism was mostly illegal, at least the practice of it in England, they thought that maybe if they came over to Maryland, there'd be some kind of toleration. And they actually did have pretty good toleration in Maryland from about 1634 up until about 1689. And a number of Catholic families, not a huge number, but a number of Catholic families came and settled in Maryland. And they had a thriving, very tolerant, religiously tolerant colony there. But in 1689, after the Glorious Revolution, which was the coming of William and Mary as king and queen in England, there was a coup in the province of Maryland, and a number of radical Protestants took over in 1689, and they made it just as illegal to be Catholic in Maryland as it had been in England, in fact, even worse. So in the time period that Carroll was born, his mother and father couldn't even be married legally, because any Catholic couple that was married, if they tried to raise their child in what was called a Catholic fashion, that child could be legally taken away from the parents and permanently taken away and raised in a Protestant family. So there was huge discrimination against Catholics in Maryland all the way up until 1774. So great freedom from 1634 up until 1689, and then almost no freedom at all from 1689 to 1774, and Carol was born in the middle of that.
So how did you continue? How would you sustain your faith if you're doing something illegally? Was it kind of underground, or did people just turn a blind eye?
Yeah, both. So it was one of those things where there were lots and lots of anti-Catholic laws on the books, depending on who was the governor of Maryland at the time, whether they would enforce them or not. So there were a number of times that they did enforce them, especially any time that the colonies were involved in any kind of war against Spain or against France. Any Catholic at any moment could be denied their property, but usually it was better just to double tax the Catholics. So to be a Catholic meant that your taxes, you were paying twice what everybody else was paying. And of course, that was to the benefit of, well, not to the Catholics, but to everybody else. Obviously, if they took everything from the Catholics, that's a one-shot deal.
Yeah.
So if they could double tax them, they could keep doing that over and over again. But those laws were, again, sometimes they were brutally enforced. Other times they were kind of ignored. But Charles Carroll's parents, and his father was also named Charles Carroll. He was Charles Carroll of Annapolis rather than Charles Carroll of Carrollton. But his father had sent the young Charles along with John Carroll, future Archbishop of America,
right,
known then as Jackie. They were best friends and cousins. Charles and Jackie went over at age 11 to France, and they stayed there for 17 years because they couldn't be educated in America because of the illegality of it. And then they came back in the 1760s.
Well, is that where John, did John enter the seminary over there, overseas then?
Peggy, I don't know that. That's a great question. I think he didn't answer until he came back. No, he must have done it. Obviously, he must have done it there because there wouldn't have been a seminary here.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
But I don't know that. That's a great question.
Oh, I stumped the professor.
You did.
Well, I don't know. It just occurred to me because I had no idea there was such dramatic oppression. So obviously, Charles Carroll had a mission when he got involved in the formation of our government and the writing of the Declaration of Independence. And he would be considered one of our first defenders of religious freedom then.
Oh, absolutely. No question about that. In fact, when he signs the Declaration, and this isn't commonly known in American history because we all celebrate the signing on July 4th, it actually wasn't signed until August 2nd. So there was an independence resolution passed on July 2nd. On July 4th, they declared independence, and then they signed the Declaration on August 2nd. And when Charles signed it, he did so by saying he thought it was the greatest document of religious toleration in the history of the world, and that's why he signed it. But he was a great advocate of religious tolerance. And even after it became legal to become Catholic, and it wasn't one of those moments where there was a law passed, it was more that the old laws were just kind of shunted aside and everyone ignored them from then on out. But once it happened, he was also very tolerant towards Protestants as well. So there was never... He never had a moment where he thought, okay, I'm going to get my revenge.
Right. he wanted equal religious
great
freedom.
Principle.
Yeah,
that's right.
But I mean,
and so did his good friend George Washington. Washington didn't have a discriminatory bone in his body. He thought anti-Catholicism was hurtful to the American cause and ridiculous.
And so the founding fathers were all kind of in agreement on this. I mean, that seems like a huge leap from, you know, Catholicism being illegal to practice Catholicism to it being, you know, written into the Declaration of Independence, you know, that everyone has the freedom of religion.
You know, Peggy, I wish it were the case that we could say that the founders all believed in that. Most of the founders retained a pretty strong anti-Catholic bias.
Okay.
But they were also willing for a lot of reasons. I think Carroll and John Carroll, both of them, Charles Carroll and John, they were such amazing people at the time, and they impressed, you know, one of John Carroll, again, future Archbishop, one of his best friends was Ben Franklin. So the fact that they could impress so many people, I think almost personally made the founders, they still thought, oh, those Catholics are crazy, but if they can produce people like the Carrolls, they must be halfway okay.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So they must have been very, very charismatic, charming people. Were they debaters? I mean, how would you get a point across in those days? I mean, how would you kind of engage in civil discourse to bring someone around to your way of thinking?
Yeah, excellent question. So one of the things that happened, Charles Carroll comes back and Jackie as well. They come back in the 1760s. They still, in the 1760s, they are not allowed to appear in a courtroom because they're not persons, because they're Catholic. They cannot testify on their behalf, or they can't be a witness at all. They can't participate in politics. the only thing a Catholic can legally do in the 1760s in Maryland is to own property. That was the only thing. And, of course, you were still double taxed.
Yeah.
So that was their only right. But what Carroll did, he got involved in a number of debates. This is Charles Carroll now. He got involved in a number of debates in the early 1770s, kind of read what was going on, that there was this shift away from the monarchy and away from England, and he became the leader of that in Maryland. So in his drive for independence, he also attached to that the idea of religious toleration. And he had the equivalent. He definitely had what we would call a master's. That he earned that when he was in France and he studied law in England for a bit. He also came close to an equivalent of what we would now call a PhD. He and John Dickinson were the two most formally educated of the founders. So when he came back, he was an excellent debater, both orally as well as in the written word. And because he could write under a pseudonym, people knew it was Carroll, but he wrote under the name First Citizen, which is ironic because, of course, he wasn't a citizen at all. But by doing that, he really became a rallying point for all American colonists. And really, again, it's that charisma that he had. He, at the time, this is amazing, I think, for any of us, Peggy. At the time, Carroll would have been considered one of the four or five most important founding fathers. And then, of course, that kind of diminishes after the initial founding. But he was a big deal at the time.
Well, he lived longer than any of them. I mean, what do you attribute his longevity to? A clean conscience?
I don't know. He exercised every day and actually complained all the time of his health, being in poor health, and then he outlives everybody.
Yeah, that's crazy. He was a very, very wealthy man. I understand that he was very wealthy, but that he used his wealth very prudently.
He did, and he invested for Jefferson. He was Jefferson's money manager, never could get Jefferson to be great about it, but a lot of people trusted him. He was one of the main, we often forget this, he was one of the main funders of the American Continental Army. He lost about a quarter of his wealth to pay for the Continental Army. He and Washington could have gone broke rather easily. I mean, these guys are guys who, when they said something, they backed it up. They were truly amazing figures.
And they were, and he and George Washington were BFFs, huh?
Yes, they were. In fact, Carroll used to joke that Washington was about the only, he was about the only person that Washington would crack a joke around. and I guess Washington had a funny sense of humor, but he didn't think it was polite to show that in public.
He wanted to keep up his dignified front.
He had that stoic personality. That's right.
We all need those kinds of friends. Well, now, you've written a book that probably contains so much more fascinating history about this patriot that we know, that's kind of a forgotten figure in our history. When is Lin-Manuel going to read your book and write a musical about it?
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
I would love that. I'm not sure if I'd want the hip hop, but I'll take whatever happens.
Did you happen to see Hamilton, Dr. Berzer?
I never have.
Oh, you never? Okay.
And, I should, but yes, that hasn't come close to Hillsdale, and I haven't made the trip. Have you seen it?
Yes, we did see it. My husband and I saw it in Chicago, and it's unfortunate when you hear so much about something for so many years, and then you go and you see it and you think, that's exactly what everybody said. The thing that's great, though, and you must, as a professor of history, appreciate anything that gets people talking about history.
Right. Absolutely.
And I'm sure you've had to correct some of your students, because I'm sure people walk away with some impressions that you might think, well, that wasn't entirely historically accurate from that musical.
Yeah, having not seen it, it gives me an excuse to kind of, wax.
Feign ignorance,
try
yeah.
to wax elegant about it. Well, anyway, yes.
Yeah. Well, so now you're out for the summer. Hillsdale is in summer session
now. And that's right. We've got about 2 months before school starts again. Yes.
It is a fine college. I mean, it's a beautiful Christian college. I would say, arguably, it has one of the best history departments in the country.
I won't disagree with you. We've got, for a student body of 1,400 students, we've got 13 full-time historians.
Wow.
So we're about 10 to 1. And yes, my colleagues are excellent. And I've been here 19 years now. So there was a... a moment, about a decade ago, where the National Catholic Register called us the best non-Catholic Catholic college in the world.
That's like as that. Good as you can get from the National Catholic
right.
Register.
Right.
Hey, Dr.
That's
Berzer,
right.
thank you so much for reminding us of an important figure.
Talking.
Really, really appreciate it. And we need to know more about this. We need to know more about Charles Carroll. So pick up a copy of his book or order it on Amazon. It's American Cicero by Dr. Bradley Berzer. We're so grateful for people like you who take the time to document and really teach the fascinating history of our great country. As Americans, this is a little bit of a deficit in our educational development. You know, you go over to Europe and you find they know so much about their history. We come up a little short sometimes. So we hope that everybody learns a little bit more about Charles Carroll in honor of this 4th of July. I wish you and your family a very joyful Independence Day holiday, Dr. Berzer. God bless you and God
you
bless
too,
America.
Hey, thank you so much.
We've got a great further conversation about George Washington coming up. So stay with us. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, a star-spangled greeting to you all, you listeners today. I am Peggy Normandin, and we're setting off our fireworks a little early this weekend in expectation of our upcoming Independence Day holiday. 4th of July is just around the corner, coming up on Wednesday, and it's an excellent time to ponder our nation's fascinating history, our indomitable spirit, and the founding fathers who risked so much to establish a new government around an ideal, really. In fact, the late Charles Krauthammer, who just recently passed away, such a fine, respected journalist, he left us a quote that would be a good theme to ponder this 4th of July. He said, and this is a quote from Charles Krauthammer, "America is the only country ever founded on an idea, the only country that is not founded on race or even common history. It's founded on an idea, and the idea is liberty." That is probably the rarest phenomena in the political history of the world. This has never happened before. And not only has it happened here, but it's working. We are the most flourishing, the most powerful, the most influential country on earth with this system, invented by the greatest political geniuses probably in human history. Those are the words of the late Charles Krauthammer. Thank you, Charles, for that profound reminder of our unique history and the brilliant man who set us in motion. And God rest your soul. May you rest in peace. One of those men, of course, was George Washington, father of our country and the subject of a most charming children's book authored and illustrated by Demi and published by Ignatius Press. Demi is with us today to discuss her really beautiful book entitled George Washington, His Legacy of Faith, Character, and Courage. Demi, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Oh, good morning.
How are you? And may I ask you to pronounce your name? Because it's a one-word name, and I want to make sure I'm putting the emphasis on the right thing.
That's fine. You're doing beautifully.
Okay. So it's like Demi Moore, then.
Well, it's similar, yeah.
Okay, good, good, good. Well, welcome to Call Me Catholic, Demi. Now, you're well known for your exquisitely illustrated biographies of spiritual figures like Mary. There's a beautiful one on Mary, St. Francis, Joan of Arc. How did George Washington become the subject of your latest children's book?
Well, I wasn't planning on doing him at all because I didn't know very much about him. I'd been doing a book for Wisdom Publications on Abraham Lincoln, and I was doing just a lot of research on our founding fathers, mainly Abraham. But from the Library of Congress, I came across this extraordinary document which told about the celestial vision of George Washington when he was at Valley Forge in his darkest hours, and his vision of a celestial being that was luminous with light and predicted that the revolution would be won and that America would be a nation. It even predicts the Civil War and even predicts till today the state that our nation is today.
How was that documented? Was that in a journal of Washington's, Demi?
Yes, it is. It was first published in the National Tribune, Volume 4, Number 12, December 1880. And it was George Washington's testimony to Officer Anthony Sherman and to reporter Wellesley Bradshaw first published in the National Tribune.
Wow. Hey, I want to just take a minute right now to open the lines to any of our listeners who would like to call in. Maybe you have read Demi's book to your children. Maybe you've enjoyed the illustrations. Maybe you have some questions about the history of George Washington, and I'm sure she'd be happy to address them. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. If you have any Washington comments or questions about Demi's work, give us a call, 714-282-6034. Demi, I love that you called attention to that, because in reading your book, that was a fact that stood out to me as something I had never heard before. And you, of course, you have it beautifully illustrated in the pages here, the picture of the image that he has, resembling the Blessed Mother. And it, in the text says, according to a popular legend, as Washington sat praying in his freezing quarters, he had a vision of a beautiful and luminous lady. She foretold that the Americans would be victorious and that a new and great nation would be born. So that was the inspiration for your book.
It was. And then in looking further into George Washington, I hadn't really read George Washington before, but then as I went deeper and deeper, I realized that God was almost in every step of his life. After his various battles and victories and everything, he himself said he sensed the hand of God in everything he did. And it just was just incredible. Then I learned that he had written prayers for every single day of the week, for morning and evening. Then I learned his officers would frequently be amazed to just see him drop down on his knees in prayer. Mm. And
what a dramatic sight that must have been. He was a formidable man in stature.
About almost 6 feet four.
Yeah.
So, and everything that is part of our history now, I mean, in the Declaration of Independence, he frequently mentions God. And then when he became president, he was the one that first said, "In God we trust."
Ah.
And immediately went into prayer with everybody that was around. It's just extraordinary. Just absolutely extraordinary.
And your book opens in one of the pages before the title page. You have a published George Washington's Sunday morning prayer, and it really touches on the depth of spiritual fortitude this man had, and his great, great humility. So, Demi, when you approach a subject like George Washington, or like some of the other great historical or spiritual figures you've addressed, you're such a wonderful illustrator. Are you drawn to stories that you can illustrate, or how do you pare down all this information and research to a certain amount of information, the salient points for your audience, which is ages 7 and up?
I guess I've been drawing since I was 2 years old, I'm told, by my parents, who said I drew on everything. But it's an energy. And it generally is something that really strikes me spiritually, like that statement about George Washington. And then the pictures just seem to form. I immediately saw how it might be George Washington sitting in his lonely home in Valley Forge and the vision. Mm-hmm. And then it's like the rest of the book really formed around that. It just sort of unflowed, unraveled, mm-hmm. It just happened. The words, everything came out of that. It's always like generally something extraordinary, something that somebody says or does. And then I just think there's such a need today for spiritual things for children. And I just thought, what a greater, we're so inundated today with superheroes. I thought, what a better superhero than George Washington?
Well, right.
I mean, he's extraordinary. I mean, not only such a great military leader in a revolution, a great political leader, but also that he was so very devout.
Yes. And I think
And leading an army ill-equipped.
They didn't conflict with each other. The fact that he could be a leader, he could be influential, he could be powerful, he could control a situation, but he could be humble. And he deferred to prayer, and he deferred to God on his decisions. And I love that duality that we need to, that's a great model for leaders today.
Well, I wrote that he is so admired because that he's become a beacon of light to the world. And even though he was twice elected president of the new nation, he never campaigned for any.
No, reluctantly, right?
Yes. And he set such a great example by serving only two terms.
Mm-hmm.
He could have served longer as requested by the people, but he was able to relinquish power in order to avoid possible future dictatorships. And therefore, he has been universally praised as a great military leader, political leader, and also a true and marvelous statesman, but also a man of God.
Mm-hmm. And I love your depictions, because your depictions really do convey all those qualities, which must be a great challenge to take someone who has been depicted so famously through the centuries and, you know, represent them to children with these beautiful watercolor bright illustrations. How did you get all that into his visage, you know?
Well, I did look at almost everything I could find of paintings, portraits, and everything on George Washington. But some of the things that really, I don't know, inspired me was his fun qualities, too, that people don't often write about, like his extraordinary 16-sided barn he built in Mount Vernon, and that it had horses running on upper levels to grind the wheat that would fall through the floorboards and then be collected below. And I just, what an extraordinary, I mean, he was an engineer, and he designed this building. He was an architect. He has so many qualities, but this selfless, this extraordinary, devout, gentle man. I mean, just unbelievable.
Well, that's why you built that quality into your title. You call him leaving a legacy of faith, character, and courage, which is, you know, the trifecta of male heroism. So, you know, you touched on his humor. We were just prior to you speaking with an historian by the name of Dr. Bradley Berzer, who wrote a book on Charles Carroll, who was one of the only Catholic signer of the Declaration of Independence. And he was very, very good friends with George Washington. And he said that they enjoyed this wonderful rapport of humor, that a lot of people don't know. George Washington had a great sense of humor, but he was very concerned, you know, with putting forth a dignified, confident front, you know, have a trust, you know, people would trust in him, that he didn't show that very often to the public.
Well, I quote a bit of that interview. I wish I'd heard the whole thing. It was marvelous what I heard. No, but I think a man of this depth, I mean, he's everything.
Yeah, he is. He was the Renaissance man, right?
The great man can rise to any occasion.
Yes, yes.
And it just seems like wherever he went, he knew how to deal with situations. And I wanted to put in the book, too, early on when he was only 11, when his father suddenly died and he had to take on so many responsibilities of running the household, being the oldest boy at home. On his own, he began copying and memorizing the rules of civility and decent behavior, which was written by the French Jesuit priests. Mm-hmm. And these rules were meant to train young men to serve God and neighbor, and they helped form George's sense of right and wrong and his strong faith and his upright nature. But in reading all the rules, they're just amazing, and I think formed a great deal of his character. I mean, just the fact that on his own he would take this book and copy it down and memorize it.
Mm-hmm.
I think every child,
should have the rules of civility.
So many political people could use these rules today. I mean, just even a few of them. It says, rule one, every action done in company ought to be with some sign of respect to those that are present.
Uh-huh.
Think before you speak. That's rule 73.
Yeah.
Pronounce not imperfectly, nor bring out your words too hastily, but orderly and distinctly.
Yes, those are rules that have kind of been wasting away, I'm afraid. You know, there's a modern book, a modern work of fiction by the author is Amar Towles, I think, and it's called Rules of Civility. And it's about a young man living in New York City earlier in the 20th century and how he kept that as his guidebook. And there was an irony to that. But it talked about George Washington's rules of civility. Demi, I'm going to bring on one of our listeners right now who has a comment for you, and she'd like to share it with us. So I'm going to invite Margaret from Birmingham, Alabama, onto the conversation. Margaret, welcome to Call Me Catholic. Thanks for calling in. Have you read Demi's book?
No, I can't wait to get it. But I did have a woman a good 20-something years ago that had mentioned to me she grew up in Louisiana, and her history book had George Washington with a vision, and I believe she said it was of the Virgin Mary,
mm-hmm.
and she said that it was part of their history book when she was growing up, so I don't know how many years that was ago, but I just wondered if the celestial being was described in the journal to see if it might have been Our Lady.
Well, that's a good question. I'm going to bring back on Demi to see if she has a response to that. What do you think about that, Demi?
Oh, well, from everything that I read, the actual words are luminous lady. And when I read it, I just thought of Mother Mary of God. I mean, it was like when she appeared and how she appeared and in this luminous light, he had a vision of a beautiful and luminous lady. She foretold that the Americans would be victorious and that a new great nation would be born.
Yeah. Well, we can assume it's Mary. Maybe if you weren't raised Catholic, you wouldn't have instantly identified that vision as Mary. But I think we know that that was undoubtedly Mary who is coming to give him assurance. Mother Mary.
Well, that's what I thought. So that's how I painted her, too.
Okay. Well, do you accept that, Margaret?
To try and find her. Yes, ma'am. She searched and searched to try and find the history book most of her elderly life, and she could never find it. And this just is a confirmation. She passed away not even a month ago.
Oh.
And I just feel like she, in my mind, was directing me to hear y'all today.
Oh, great.
So I know we spoke about it many a time. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for calling, Margaret. And that's a wonderful reminder, a wonderful image to keep with us as we go into the 4th of July holiday. So, Demi, what are some of the other surprising characteristics of George Washington that you learned in your vast research for this children's book?
You know, I just found one thing where I first read this. I have it copied down. Do you want to hear the exact words about the luminous lady? I do not know whether it is going to the anxiety of my mind or what, but this afternoon as I was sitting at this table engaged in preparing a dispatch, something in the apartment seemed to disturb me. Looking up, I beheld standing opposite me a singularly beautiful being. So astonished was I, for what I had given strict orders not to be disturbed, that it was some moments before I found language to inquire the cause of the visit. And then he asked a third and second time to say who she is. And then there's no response. And then gradually the surrounding atmosphere seemed to fill with sensation and grew extremely luminous.
Hmm.
Everything about me seemed to rarefy. The mysterious visitor also becoming more airy, yet more distinct to my eyes than before. I began to feel as one dying, or rather to experience the sensations which I have sometimes imagined accompanied death. I did not think, I did not reason, I did not move. All were alike impossible. I was only conscious of gazing fixedly, vacantly at my companion. And then he goes into what she did. Presently I heard a voice saying, Son of the Republic, look and learn.
Oh, wow.
And then he says, I beheld a being like an angel standing or rather floating in midair.
That's riveting. I'm just sitting here thinking, oh, wait, I got to remember. I'm on the radio here. I'm just kind of in a trance. Those are the words of George Washington as he documented them in his journal. That's fantastic, Demi. I can certainly see how, as an artist, that captured your imagination because it certainly captured his, didn't it?
Well, and then, I mean, that was just like the beginning of it.
No, it's beautiful.
I just started looking at all the miracles in his life. Mm. And I mean, there were so many miracles.
Well, he was ordained to be the president. That is for sure. It takes a rare combination of qualities. What was his relationship with his wife, Martha? I know she came from a very wealthy, very prestigious family. What would she have said if he shared this intimacy with her about his vision?
Well, she was just with him all the way. He adored her. And I wrote in the book that George was almost 6'4" and Martha was barely 5 feet.
I know.
But he loved her great qualities because she was beautiful, considerate, graceful, and had simple ways. And the wife of a statesman said, Mrs. Washington is one of those unassuming characters which create love and esteem. In her presence, I feel more deeply impressed than I did before their majesties of Britain.
Wow.
And so she must have been a perfect partner for George Washington?
Well, he was gone a lot. How many children did they have, Demi? She had two, right, when she married him, because she was a widow.
Yes, two, named Patsy and Jack. And everybody adored everybody, so it was very, very wonderful.
What credence can you give the story of his chopping down the cherry tree and admitting it to his father?
Well, I hope to think it's true. I mean, it's just, you know, such a wonderful story that goes along with everything we know about his nature.
Yeah, right.
And then also, what wonderful parents. I mean, the father must have been as extraordinary as George was himself.
One of the illustrations that I also love in your book, Demi, is it's a two-page spread, and it's the depiction of the Boston Tea Party when the colonial rebels got on dressed as Indians or Native Americans. I'm sure you were very careful with your language, too, in this, using the modern language. But it's just full of details. It's, you know, and by the way, listeners, these books are beautiful. They're not like little paperbacks. They're big, square, hardbound books, like about 10 inches by 10 inches. And the illustrations are so, so vibrant. And this particular illustration is really fun because you have all these, you know, they have the headdresses on and you see the tea going into the water, and you have the British flag at the boat. Which of the illustrations in the book did you enjoy doing the most? Do you have a favorite?
I don't know. I have to say, I just love to draw and paint, and so, I mean, just doing it is my joy.
Yeah. You have some fabulous history of having your books win awards. In fact, tell us about the book that First Lady Laura Bush selected for her children's library.
Well, that was for the Barbara Bush Literary Incentive Program, and she chose my book called The Empty Pot. And so we were invited to the White House where we met her and her husband and Millie the dog.
Yes.
And she was marvelous. She really got a lot of books into schools and a lot of children reading. And
well, you know, I stand corrected because I thought it was Laura Bush because she had a library. You know, she had a big reading push as well. But it was First Lady Barbara Bush's. God rest her soul.
Started it, her Children's Literary Incentive Program.
Oh, wonderful.
And she was really great.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, do you, in the process of putting one of these books together, Demi, do you write it first or do you illustrate and then write to the illustrations?
Well, as I mentioned, I mean, being inspired so much by the words, I just started writing down words of George Washington. And I wasn't really even thinking of a book. I just was just loving what he did and such his example. And after all these pages of just marvelous quotes, they started to form sort of an order. And then I saw it could be a book. And then I put it together as a text and then just started painting.
Oh, I'm so admire your skill. I want to say I'm envious of your painting talents, but I have a particular love of illustrative types of paintings. You know, what was it? N.C. Wyeth. Didn't he do a lot of illustrations of children's book, which I absolutely love. So you've got a tremendous gift. Now, are you going to get back to Abraham Lincoln and give him his fair time?
Oh, well, I did Abraham Lincoln first.
Oh, you did finish that one.
I've been working with Ignatius Press on a book we actually just finished yesterday.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
It's called Mozart. It's Mozart, and it's called Gift of God.
Oh, tremendous.
And again, it's like after discovering all these extraordinary statements of Mozart, you know, and his unbelievable spirituality. He was raised a very devout Roman Catholic, and how much prayer and everything wove throughout his life is what that will sort of follow, like the way of the Washington book does.
Yeah. Well, I love the way you weave it in subtly but very authentically, so it doesn't look like an affectation or something you're layering on to the character. So I just encourage you all to go look up Demi's work. Her name, single name, is spelled D-E-M-I. This particular book is called George Washington, His Legacy of Faith, Character, and Courage. But like I said, she has some other beauties out there about some of our great saints. So, Demi, thank you so much for writing and illustrating this book. book in the first place, and then for sharing its background with us. You've got a gift and you're using it for good, and that's always inspiring to behold. So we look forward to your next work, Demi. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, too. All these wonderful things you're doing. Marvelous.
Thank you. Thank you, and God bless, and have a happy 4th of July.
Hey,
we all have talents, not always like the great author and illustrator Demi, but we have gifts that we can share to spread the gospel, build up the church in our homes, in our neighborhoods and communities. Here's one way you can participate in that. Think about becoming an EWTN media missionary. This is such a cool gateway to joining our EWTN family and helping us build up presence in your parish and faith community. EWTN media missionaries are, they're kind of like our ambassadors out there, making sure that your parish is stocked with plenty of EWTN program guides and information brochures, facilitating announcements about EWTN in your church bulletin. And if you're good with social media, then you can get the word out through those kinds of resources. So look it up, EWTNmediamissionaries.com, and they'll give you lots of information. So maybe you refer that to a friend who wants to join. And I also want to say welcome to our new station, part of the EWTN radio family, FM 106.9 KOOV Armor of God Radio, serving Kepner, Texas. Special thanks to Tom and Anne-Marie McNew, who have worked very hard to get Armor of God Radio on the air in Kepner, Texas. God bless you all down there. And happy 4th of July, everybody. We'll see you next week, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.